This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. Here's where we talk with knowledgeable people about all things involved with struggling young people and the programs that try to help them. Today, we're going to try to answer the question about if we have an increasingly violent society. And as my guest, I have L. Craig Williams. Craig is the author of The Fourth Army, holds a bachelor's degree in European history and a Juris Doctorate degree from Columbia, specializing in international law. But he speaks on the violence that pervades modern living and focuses on recognizing the violence that surrounds us. So welcome. Glad to have you here, Craig. This is going to be an interesting discussion. I'm really looking forward to it.
Good, and thank you for having me on and giving us a chance to consider as a group the role of the pervasiveness of violence in our surroundings, and how it comes, you know, becomes more and more prevalent without us even realizing it.
Okay, well, the title, The Epidemic of Vicarious Violence, on that. And for those of you that are listening live, down to the lower hand right is a chat. And if you click on that, you can ask questions of the guests, and then we'll answer them and get them involved in it. And so you can participate in this discussion right along with Craig and myself. Well, let's start off. Get a definition. What do you mean by vicarious violence?
Well, vicarious violence is the participation in violence by remote access. And so most of us think about 100 years ago in American society, and we think about mining accidents and floods, and even back as far as the hundreds of thousands of people killed or injured in the Civil War. And we say to ourselves, well, we live in a much less violent age than that. The reality is that that is not true at all. The substance of understanding vicarious violence is this idea that violence is available all around us, and we summon it into our consciousness and into our living rooms with the flick of a switch. We do that by television. We do it by notebook computers. We do it in many, many different ways. And so while there's this view common in the United States that we're a progressive people and that we are making social progress and that generally the condition of our country and our people is much better off than it was 50 years ago or 100 years ago, I believe that we need to stop and think about that for a moment, because violence is much more pervasive. It is much more readily accessible. It is much more difficult to control. Our children, our teens, our young adults are becoming immersed in vicarious violence that they see in films, in books, in music. And if we look at this carefully, I really believe that we have, through technology, which is a wonderful force that we need to exploit for the betterment of all of our folks, that we have come to an age of what I call push-pull violence. There is violence that's pushed at us when riots break out or marches turn into rock throwing, or we're struggling for something like voting rights 50 years ago, and violence is involved in achieving that. That is violence that's kind of pushed at us or into our surroundings. Pull violence is the kind of violence that we summon every time we turn on the television. And I think we need to reflect on this fundamentally and very carefully, because I believe that this has grown up around us, especially in the years following World War II. And we have recognized it at times and not recognized it as others. And so as we talk through this today, I think vicarious violence is, as I say, all around us. Most of us have two or three or maybe even more television sets in our house. We have cable news programs. We have all kinds of other cable programs. So we have 300 channels of television broadcast, but many of those channels are broadcasting some form of violent behavior practically as their staple. So without being generalizing or too detailed about it, if you just open your own paper, even while we're speaking here, and look at the television listings, how many of those listings are murder mysteries, cop shows, autopsy shows, forensic pathology shows, where television and cameras bring us right into an autopsy room. I can assure you, I never contemplated ever being in an autopsy room. I'm not a doctor. Never thought that I would ever have that experience. I don't think that it's a worthwhile experience. When we think of how that violence that just pervades what's around us really does begin to condition us to violent acts and violence in others around us. And we
hey, let me ask a question. You're sort of a takeaway. What I think sure. you're saying, and there's some, and a couple things to back up on, is that the violence that we're permeated with now is of a different time. It's our kind, vicarious, whereas in the past it was more real or actual. Like, say, one of the statistics I've heard several times, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand it, is even though school shootings really hit the news and everybody's talking about it, the statistics show that they were more common, say, 50, 70 years ago. And so that kind of violence has diminished, but we're talking and impacted emotionally by it more. So I think it's some sort of, we're getting the emotional impact as if we're always in violent, even though in reality there isn't as much as we used to have. Is that a fair statement?
I'm not sure that there isn't as much as we used to have. I would certainly agree with you that news media and broadcast media bring us into what I call the "you are there" moments. So in those famous broadcasts in World War II and right after World War II, the famous TV journalist Edward R. Murrow invited us into some of the mayhem that was going on in London with the famous "You Are There" broadcasts. Well, 24-hour news cycles and the ability to beam images all around the world very, very quickly from multiple video cameras and even iPhones bring that violence. It puts us in the moment. So with respect to the school shootings, I think gun violence is something that we should definitely talk about today. There may have been isolated incidents of one in two people being impacted in schools, but I think both the depth and the tenor of school shootings seems to me to be something new in the last 50 to 70 years since World War II. In the first place, The prevalence and the availability of automatic rifles allow these teenagers who take recourse to violent acts to do much more harm than they could ever do with a normal 22 pistol or even an old 30-06 where you had a bolt action and chambered one round at a time. Now, 20 rounds in less than a minute is not that unusual for automatic rifles.
Or semi-automatic too. Those are legal. Automatics. Well. Yeah.
I think that's
more common on the automatics. That's more a military weapon, and then some of them get that. But the semi-automatic, you can get the 20 shots if you have a large enough magazine in a month or in a minute. Well, right. So. I think that's something we could discuss quite a bit, but I think it's very clear, and I fully agree, that the violence has reached epidemic proportions in our lives just emotionally because we're at it. And the big difference, I think one change is that in the past we used to read about wars and they were all far off. In Vietnam, that's where that, what you talk about, you were there moment, really took hold. It started in World War II, but in Vietnam, we were seeing the maiming and the violence right in our living rooms. And same thing with the other things that have happened.
Well, and I fully agree. I think even today, looking at the images that are broadcast to us on our morning news program of what's going on in Gaza today, and then if we want to know more about it, we simply go to an internet news site that gives us even more graphic detail about what's happening. So the immediacy, the emotional impact of widespread warfare is all around us. And as I say, and it's really a tangential topic to what we're talking about, but I believe that the evolution of technology and how rapidly that change has occurred since the early 1950s and 60s is the reason for which we are not really identifying the vicarious violence that we are seeing and participating in all the time.
We've talked about the news, and yes, that's a lot of violence, and particularly with what's going on in the Gaza Strip and all that. There's two other areas that also feeds the same thing, and they're not real violence as you'd call it in the real world, but it has the emotional impact, and that's computer games like Halo, Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, and the action films. At any evening, you can get on your television, you can watch something where, 20 people are blown away and blown up and murder and mayhem goes on, all under the guise of fiction. But again, that I think that feeds into what you're talking about, that vicarious violence, both of those.
Yes, and I think what's particularly worrisome about video games as we see them distributed in our society is that there are almost no controls over the purchase of those games, and there are almost no controls over the content of those games. So Grand Theft Auto, Halo, as you mentioned, there are all kinds of truly hideous violence that are reflected in those video games. Just 2 days ago, I was on a bus, and I was looking at five or six different kids that got on that bus. It was a city bus, taking these kids, some of them to prep school because they were wearing blazers, and others to a public school that was nearby. Not a single one of them did not have either earbuds in their ears, and the one sitting next to me was listening to a kind of gangster rap music and hip-hop music that is permeated with violence and viewing women as sexual objects. And three of the other kids were all playing video games, two of them on cell phones and one of them with a video game console. And many of those games are extremely violent. They outdo each other for violence. There's even a website that assesses the coolness, in quotation marks, of the new games for how much slaughter and mayhem and decapitations and explosions that they show. And it feeds, you know, it feeds into action films, many of which are really only, you know, there's a loose narrative of a story. It's really to frame the, you know, the car chase, the building explosion, the, you know, the machine gun fire, each one more violent than the last. And, Lon, I have to say, I think that one of the things that is of great concern to me is that the standards and the limits that we set up in times past for access to that kind of violence in media are way past their sell-by date.
You know, let me interject something in here, because that's what I was thinking in terms of the standards. And it seems to me it used to be. Now, I was raised in and went to college in the 50s and 60s, and so I have some familiarity with the pre-internet and the pre-digital things. There's a lot of things that there is a mentality that children were to be protected from adults, so they wouldn't talk about some of the serious problems, the issues of the day around children. They were protecting them, and I think there's been a change in society where parents plan to say, oh, that's the tough world out there. We've got to prepare them. And so the standards, I know there's some standards on games, but they're easily gotten around. One example is my grandson was very much into computer games, and he was 11, and there was a version of the game where if there was an explosion, it said pow on the things. He did not like that game. He wanted the one with a full gory explosion, and and so he got it. Not through me, but he got it. And so just exactly what you're talking about. So the standards have changed. I think partially it's a societal thing. Partially it's the availability. What else? I'll speculate. What might have caused this change? And the standards going down or ignored?
Some of the things that have led to this this avalanche of violent images and the availability of sounds and images and vicarious participation in violence are simply the rapid rate of technological change. I too am of an age where there were coin phones and we had to go pump quarters into them to make a call.
The good old days.
Yeah, one of the gurus and futurologists of Silicon Valley wrote not very long ago in Wired magazine that on average young adults and adults will have as many as 4 devices that they commonly use during the course of the day. There are iPads and cell phones and notebooks and Kindles and all kinds of different access points. The technology to control what younger people can see, the protected age group that we've always had in our society for over 100 years, has just not caught up with the availability of different kinds of content. So I often think that we are, you know, we are fighting a 21st century war with a musket when we look at some of this stuff. And some of the things that we have hoped technologically would work in this setting regrettably haven't worked. One example with which you may really be already familiar is this experiment to get a notebook computer into every child's hand in the Hoboken Central Public Schools. And so well over 1,000 notebooks were purchased to keep the kids from accessing sites, either suggestive, sexual sites or violent sites or, social networking sites that were too mature for them. They had a program loaded on each computer, prepackaged by the maker, called The Next Nanny. That's what it was labeled. It's just called NN on the computer. And that was enabling the school system itself to control what those computers could be used for when they were taken home by the kids outside school. The problem with it was, is as the kids began to do their homework and things, Next Nanny meant that in order for the computer to boot up when it had been turned off, it often took up to 20 minutes to boot up. And then it also led to a lot of crashes. So those computers today are sitting in a disposal facility. They've been junked by the school system because the kids found it easy to get around Next Nanny, and the ones that couldn't get around it, it took 20 minutes to boot up. And our attention spans today are more like 20 seconds at best. They're certainly not 20 minutes. You don't turn on an old tube television and wait for it to warm up until you get an image. You want instant gratification.
Yeah, I remember I used to be able to do that, but I can't do that now. If in 10, 15 seconds if a site doesn't come up, I'm on to the next one generally. We have a couple of questions from our listeners, and back to what we were talking about earlier. An interesting, intriguing question. Why doesn't the news come with rating?
Well, the news could come with a rating, but there's no one to enforce that. And so the Federal Trade Commission and the Federal Broadcast Commission have sometimes gotten after both radio programs and also television programs about their content, but it's mostly about profane language or sexually suggestive images.
We've also lost the family time on the radio and the TV, too, what you used to have.
Yes, and some of the broadcasts, I noticed that a few of the broadcasts are now, as they go to a clip of a particular place, war imagery in Syria right now, the commentator is saying, warning, some of these images are very disturbing, and you may not want everyone in your family to watch those.
Well, that draws everybody in.
A little bit. I'm sorry?
That draws everybody in. Oh, I want to see what they're hiding.
I'm afraid it probably does. I think that the communications lobby is extremely powerful in terms of their impact on legislation and administrative rulings in Washington. And they have resisted, just as initially, these film studios resisted ratings for a long, long time. I do think that they would be useful. And I think all of the news programs that are getting images from all over the world from various feeds certainly have the ability to edit those in real time before they're shown to the audience. So the worst of some of those images could be edited out, or there could be controls, or they could refer people that want to see all of the images to a website where when the viewer signs into the website, they could indicate that they are at least 18 years of age. Now, there'll be some lying going on there, but there are certainly more things that we could be doing. So I think your listener is exactly right that this is an idea whose time has come, and in my view, it's way overdue.
Okay, there's a question here that I basically directed to you. Are you saying the games and media are to blame for people's actions, or is it the lack of communication and value teaching? Could you comment on that?
Yes, I do not believe that the games and the content publisher of those games have a direct causal link to asocial behaviors. I do, however, believe that they owe it to the consumers of those games and the custodial parents of the consumers of those games, if the child is of an age where they're still being supervised, to give those people real control over what's displayed. Some of those games, Halo's a good example, could have a junior version which was much less violent than what is being sold in the standard package. So I don't believe that you can say that a software coder and publisher sitting in somewhere in the U.S. is responsible for the Newtown shootings. But the fact of the matter is that we are constantly being conditioned to violent acts. We're being conditioned to accept those. We're even being conditioned to think that in certain activities, they're laudable. People people who are watching certain kinds of professional sports are looking to see injuries. Not all of them, but some of them. We know that bounties have been given by coaches for injuring players on the other side. We know that pro football players are increasingly subjected to documented concussions and cranial episodes that result from repeated head impact. And we've known that that's going on for a while. So that the coaches themselves, if they put in a bounty program that you get extra bling or extra game or playing time or money or cars for injuring another player, then the coach deserves to be fired, and the NFL really needs to get after that. But in that setting, yes, I think there's a direct one-to-one causal relationship, and those people should be sanctioned at law and otherwise for their actions. But a publisher of a violent video game, if they're taking steps to protect the distribution from very small and impressionable teenagers, I don't think that we can point to them and say, you caused the Newtown shooting. Certainly all of us collectively are accepting violence in our daily lives that we should not be accepting. And there's a lot we can do about it.
You know, there's a question here or a comment made by one of our listeners. And would you talk about that a little bit? It's about keeping violence out of life is putting a shelter that is not reality. Is it really best to shelter people from the reality of what is going on out there? Would you like to elaborate or point out what our question, the assumptions there?
Yes, I'd very much like to discuss that. A certain amount of violence comes to all of us. We are involved in car crashes. A child or a relative is injured in war. When we're younger, sometimes things boil over and we get involved in shoving matches or fist fights or other things. A certain amount of violence, I believe, is something that is common to the human condition, and I don't believe that we should ever turn away from it. In the Fourth Army, a very considered, smart, retired senior commander of armed forces said to me, well, you're trashing everything that the veterans did for us in World War II. Not at all. Not at all. Building peace and a less violent society and trying to have people recognize how easy it is to slip into casual violence and accept violent acts by others, is that's just the way human beings are, without struggling to change that or to change that behavior and give alternatives to that behavior, is not denigrating the need to defend ourselves. If we're attacked, we clearly need to defend ourselves as a people and as individuals, and I'm not arguing against that. Mm-hmm. But I am saying that we are becoming increasingly conditioned to accept violence all around us and just say, well, that's the way people are. I don't believe for a moment that taking guns into schools to solve problems by the kids is anything that is part and parcel of the human condition. I think, you know, I went to a rural, you know, agriculturally based high school. Guns were all around us. I am no enemy of guns used in the proper place. But no one ever thought that it was appropriate to take a gun to school to solve a problem. And we should not accept that. So, yes, I believe that violence, there is going to come to us in life. It certainly is. I don't think there's any way of protecting ourselves and hiding from it. But we needn't let it be as pervasive and as pernicious and as common as it is. And
well, there's a talk about desensitizing people, and so they're more accepting of violence in the real world because they've been around so much vicarious violence.
Yes, that's right. We're seeing all of this uncontrolled access to violence, so I believe that we're becoming increasingly willing to say, well, that's just part of our social fabric. That's who we are. Americans are not Europeans, so we have guns everywhere. I don't think that's right. I think there's been a sea change of how violence shapes the world around us. And I think that's largely happened in the post-World War II era. So I think it's become much more of a problem and much more pervasive than I believe that it was before. And that's not just a Pollyanna view of, you know, past times were always better than present times. It's not that at all. It's the proof of the pudding here is simply to open the TV digest in your own newspaper. Just run your fingers down, take a marker, and just put a line through every program that is based on murders and whodunits and autopsies and even reality shows. And I think, and have written a couple of blog posts about reality shows that invite us to watch, you know, drunken sexual promiscuity on a beach in New Jersey, not to name names, denigrate the human condition. It's like Victorian times when people went to Bedlam, from which, you know, which was an asylum for those who were mentally challenged, and paid a pound to stand up in a railing and look down at people rolling around on the floor and screaming and shouting obscenities. And reality TV shows are just like that. We would condemn the Victorian action, and yet millions do the same thing today. And again, that's not something that we should accept. And I would invite your listeners to take stock and to think about the fact that that isn't something that is inherent in the human condition.
Yeah. Well, part of my early reaction to the early reality TV shows, and there was some violence and stuff on that. But what I really objected about, it was training people or encouraging people by the format to lie, to cheat, to backbite, and things like that. That was very unhealthy, and I think along the same way as the gratuitous violence in a lot of these shows.
I think it was a very unhealthy way of providing amusement and entertainment, and to that I would add the fact that it holds these people in some of the reality shows, it holds some of them up as some kind of a role model, or it makes us more accepting of binge drinking and using controlled substances. Part of the problem with those shows, and part of the problem with some pro sports, is that we're so concerned with breaking the record or being entertained with a reality show that these young people are paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to parade their drunkenness and their promiscuity in front of cameras, and are known all over the world for that kind of behavior, and the reality shows, even some of the ones that people thought were just kind of common everyday events, like for a while Jay Leno was jaywalking, and he would ask, and they would televise people's lack of knowledge of who the vice president was. Well, what that really says is that generally all of us have done a poor job of educating people and preparing them to be constructive in the world, but it would never occur to me to single out someone and make fun of them because they didn't know who the vice president of the U.S. was, and yet hundreds of thousands of people watched that and thought that it was somehow funny. So I have problems with reality TV shows and what they teach us about ourselves on multiple levels.
Okay, well, we're getting some more comments in the chat, and I don't know how much we want to get into the gun debate. The time is passing. We were more than halfway through, and I want to talk about more about how we can make a difference and how we have a question of cutting down the violence. But one of them says, so do you support the right of an adult to carry a gun? Well, let's touch on that for a couple of minutes and then get on to solutions.
Okay, well, my answer in a nutshell is, yes, I support the right of adults to have and use guns for sporting purposes, generally. I want to be, however, very clear. I think that we are being held at gunpoint by the gun lobby as a nation. We have far too many guns in our homes and our schools. And I know that there are a lot of people, many of them in my family, who know how to use firearms, lived in a rural environment where they were completely useful and necessary. But we have, based on production statistics that I haven't cooked up, but that are available from governmental resources, we have more guns and pistols than we have people in the United States. And here's what I really want to invite your readers to think about. Again, what are we doing to protect our children? Very meaningful, carefully done research shows that parents themselves are shocked that young children between 4 and 10 know where their guns are kept. They know where the ammunition is kept. They can get to those guns. And they do. And leaving a gun in a controlled environment to see if these kids who'd been through all of that training, both at school and at home, would pick up that gun and start playing with it, in more than half the cases, those kids did. So while I believe that there is a role for gun sportsmanship in the United States, let's not forget, guns kill people. They kill over 35,000 kids each year, carelessly and by error for the most part. And children are fascinated with them, just as they are fascinated with most things that are forbidden, that are hidden, that are controlled. So the thing that I offer and the thing that I lived by myself when I had young children is I knew every home they went to, and I knew whether there were guns in that house or not. And if there were guns, unless that person had a gun safe with a unique combination lock, my kids didn't go there. And I invite your listeners to consider the same thing. Have the kids come to play at your house. Make sure that your guns are truly kept in a safe and only you know the combination. We license and control all kinds of things that are harmful to us in our society. You can't get a driver's license until you're of a certain age and demonstrate a capacity to use a car because it can kill people. Guns have only one purpose, and that is to kill something. Now, yes, I know all about target shooting and clay pigeon shooting, and I've done it. But that's not the purpose for which the gun is ultimately bought. It is bought usually to kill animals. Unfortunately, it is also sometimes deployed to kill people, and in very irresponsible ways. So I do believe that our lack of cohesive national statutes about how to own guns, how to use them, how to buy them, has led to the fact that there's really no real control at all. There are controls in certain states, certain municipalities, certain localities. At LaGuardia the other day, I saw a man pulled out of line, checking in for a flight, and I learned later that the poor guy was utterly astounded because he brought a gun and he had it in his checked luggage, and he didn't know that there was a law against having a gun in New York State. We are living in a crazy quilt of gerrymandered laws about how to own, use, store, and handle guns. And we need to do something about it. And that will probably light up your comments board from a lot of your listeners. But that, I'm sorry. It's part of the response to violence that is just beginning to overwhelm parts of our society.
Okay. Well, yeah. And I wanted some comment on that. How do you propose we cut down on violence? That's a question from our things, and that's, I think, we have about 10, 15 minutes left, and let's talk about some solutions. So how do you suggest we can cut down on violence?
I think there are many, many things that we can do and that we should do. The first thing that I say to people about this topic is, first, let's assess what we're doing, and then let's identify those parts that are problematic, and then let's start changing it. So one of the things that we can all do is we can take a look at how we spend our leisure time. Take a notepad, actually take an iPad if you want a technology solution, and just look back at the last week. How much time did we spend watching cop shows, chase shows? Did we go to an action movie? Should we be watching extreme boxing and no rules fighting? Is that helpful? What is another car chase in a movie? What does that deliver to us? What good does it do us emotionally? Then from that assessment of how we're actually spending our time, let's start converting that into other forms of amusement and entertainment and sports. And it's true of music and video and films, and we need to also talk to our children and the young people who look to us for leadership about how they live their lives. So I think the first step is let's each of us look at what we're doing. And then secondly, let's take some of that time and start actively trying to help people avoid some of the things that lead to violence. And so what I mean by that is most of us, by the time we're adults, have a vast storehouse of knowledge that we've acquired through public funding, by going to school, through private schools, through our churches, synagogues, and through social settings and learning from our families. And yet there are people around us who can't read. Let's use some of that time to help people become more constructively engaged. I don't think it's too big a shot, and I don't want to be preachy about this, but in addition to reducing violence, we need to reduce some of the sources of violence. We need to think about social justice and environmental justice. Every single day, we make 50 different choices that have an environmental impact. Most of us don't even realize some of that impact. I think the consumption of animal protein is one of those choices, right? I'm not a vegetarian. I like a good barbecued steak as well as the next guy. But I am conscious of the fact that there are states out west where farmers can't plant crops because there's no water. The same thing's happening in Texas. And yet, one ton of beef, it takes 4 million gallons of water to produce one ton of beef. Vegetables consume about 20% of that amount. So what we eat...
For the same amount of protein.
Yeah, one ton of vegetables is right at 850,000 gallons of water. So about 20% of the 4 million gallons for a ton of beef. I don't want all of us to become vegetarians. But certainly, there's a widespread movement in the U.S. that is kind of putting up the challenge goal of reducing animal and fish protein to 10% of our diet in terms of calorie intake per week. And certainly some of the things in which, in the ways in which animals are raised and slaughtered, I grew up in ranching country. I know exactly how it happens, and I understand it. But we can make do with less of it, especially the whole movement of locavore and getting away from industrial agriculture, where chickens are bred to where they can't stand on their own legs, and various other terrible things happen to the animals that they're being raised. We need to pay attention to that. And, Lon, there are, believe me, many, many choices we each make every day. Let's wash a cup, not use a paper cup. Let's use a washcloth that's dry to dry our hands rather than a bath towel.
Did we lose Craig?
I'm still on.
Oh, okay, go ahead. You sort of blanked out there for a second.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was saying that I think we make choices about environmental matters every single day. It doesn't cost us anything to dry our hands with a washcloth rather than a bath towel, or to wash a cup rather than use a paper cup.
Okay, well, we have about 5 minutes left. Let's focus on the kids and what can be done to the kids and the computer games and the media and the violence. What can we do, what could be done to help on that, and that portion of it?
I think we need to band together about video games and films and downloads of violent movies. We can all speak to our federal and state, local, and locally elected officials and really insist that there be distribution guidelines and that they be followed, and that publishers of video games have different age group appropriate versions of that game, which I don't think would cost all that much to produce. Nor to police the distribution. Parents need to be sensitized to more and more to the fact that they need to constantly look at controls for the downloads of films and video games and the content of their kids' phones. iPads are another access point. We don't really need to worry, I think, today too much about, you know, kids going into bars and you know the bugaboos of the recent past about alcohol consumption. Yes, we need to be concerned about it, but we need to be equally concerned about the things that affect our kids' emotional health as well as their bodily health.
That's a very good point, and I know that's one of the things in the schools that I work with, that emotional growth is the term some of them used, because the emotional health of the kids is so important and can be so damaging. And I think that's what we're talking about in this whole vicarious violence. It's the emotional health and desensitizing the kids, making them certain things are okay, you know, like the pornography, that certain things... Kids learn the wrong things about what is okay for relations with the opposite sex. Do you have any more specific suggestions? And banding together is good. How can we do that?
I think we occasionally need to remind our elected officials that they really do work for us and not for the lobbies that write them big checks, at least if they want our vote next time. So that's certainly one avenue. I believe that the faith-based community can be a major, major player in helping us get better controls. And what normally happens here is that as we get closer to imposing controls, the relevant industries step forward with their own version of their own self-enforcement guidelines. And that's all right. I don't believe that that's destructive at all, as long as we get them in place and keep them in place.
Okay. We have about 1 minute left. Craig, I've appreciated this very much. It's been very interesting. Would you like to tell how people can get a hold of you and or any resources that might be good if they wanted to further pursue this topic?
Yes, absolutely. My website has a blog page on it, and I write I blog quite often. One of the most recent blogs is about the World Cup and choosing balls over bullets. Your listeners can find that website at www.lcraigwilliams, C-R-A-I-G, Williams, spelled in the normal way, .com. And there they will find reflections on political matters. The access to the book, The Fourth Army, is also there. It's available on Amazon and other venues.
Okay, and we've just about reached the time. I'm getting some frantic gestures from our engineer. This is Lon Woodbury with L. Craig Williams. Thank you very much for Craig being here. We'll have to have you on again to further discuss this.
Thanks for giving personal peace a hearing.
Absolutely. We've been talking about an epidemic of vicarious violence with L. Craig Williams. And this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report.